thanks everyone for coming. And I would like to start off with acknowledging the Noongar people, not just because it's the land on which we gather today, but probably even more importantly, it was the land on which all this work was conducted. So I think that's really significant. And I'm really glad to be to present results of a West Australian study in Perth. So I think by now we've all established that PrEP is a really highly effective HIV prevention strategy. So just to give a brief rundown of what was happening with PrEP in Australia, and I know Andrew Grilley kind of touched on this yesterday. From 2014, the earliest PrEP demonstration projects started, and they were predominantly along the eastern seaboard states. So by the end of 2015, we had about 500 people on PrEP in these demonstration projects. And given the efficacy of these studies, we expanded them. And by the end of 2016, from 2016, all Australian states and territories, with the exception of the Northern Territory, had a PrEP implementation trial. And we had over 16,000 people on these trials by the end of 2017. So this provided the impetus for the West Australian Pre-Exposure Prophylaxis for HIV Implementation Trial, mouthful, but we'll call it the PrEP at WA study from here on. So this study had two primary objectives, and I'll be reporting on the first one today about assessing the HIV incidence in study participants, but I'll actually save this for the very end of the presentation to hopefully keep your interest throughout. The second point there about measuring the population level impact of PrEP rollout was actually essentially presented by Byron on this very stage earlier today. So going off the notes that I got from his presentation, there was a 47% decline in new HIV diagnoses in Western Australia between 2014 and 2018, and they were record lows, but that was coming off, I guess, a continuing trend of decreasing HIV diagnoses across the state. And we'll kind of come back to this a little bit more in some later slides. I also want to look at the four secondary objectives of the study. So we sought to evaluate the rate of PrEP uptake, look at participant demographics, STI positivity, and as well behavioural risk practices. And just a bit more background on the study. We started enrolment in November 2017, so this was the last Australian PrEP implementation study to kick off, and we concluded enrolment in September 2018. During that time, we recruited 901 participants across four clinics here in Western Australia, predominantly in Perth, and they're listed there for you. So these participants had a median follow-up time of 15 months, and we had quite high retention on the study. We just had 12 withdrawals during that period. Initially, the study was designed for up to 2,000 participants, but as we're all well aware, that PrEP was listed on the PBS in April of 2018. So I'll go on to the next slide and we'll have a look. You can see this is basically in April 2018 kicked in, and it looks like the slope of the line kind of changed a little bit following that. So we still had quite consistent enrollment across this period, but also, as Byron mentioned earlier, it looked like a lot of people were accessing PBS PrEP. What did I write down? A 4x increase in the number of people accessing PrEP across 2018. So obviously those people weren't joining our study, or perhaps people who were in our study then cycled off and went on to PBS PrEP. So looking at demographic characteristics, and also coming from the Kirby Institute where we ran the New South Wales trial as well, in terms of comparisons, they were remarkably similar populations, and I guess not just to EPIC, but generally the other PrEP trials across Australia. So predominantly cisgendered male participants, but with also small numbers of trans and cisgendered women and non-binary people, and predominantly gay identified, with about 8% identifying as bisexual. Median age was 34, which was about average across the studies, and just under 2% of our participants identified as Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. Most people were living in Perth, and a few of the studies that have been presented at this conference have touched on this idea of gay postcodes. So we looked at gay postcodes, and this was conducted in analysis by Denton Callender and colleagues at Kirby, and they have assessed the proportion of gay men in each suburb in Australia. So we can then stratify that into greater than 20% gay postcodes, 10 to 20%, 5 to 10%, and fewer than 5% gay men. So we can see that about a fifth of our study participants lived in one of these five gay postcodes. I've listed there for you. So if you need to know where to go out partying after the conference, that's probably a good indicator of where the fun will be. Looking at region of birth, we had three-fifths of participants were born within Australia, and this is something else that I guess keeps coming up in this conference, is divergent HIV diagnoses among overseas-born men. So I guess the new way that we're tending to report this is by separating other high-income English-speaking countries, so Canada, New Zealand, Ireland, the UK, and the US, from that background. So really we've got, three quarters of our study participants are being born in Australia or other high-income English-speaking countries. And then we've got 13% of our study participants here in Western Australia that were born in Asia. So I guess that just allows us to have a better look at what this might mean for our study participants and how country of birth can affect any study outcomes potentially. Now, as other people have also commented on, the launch of the new guidelines has ruined a lot of people's slides, a lot of people's presentations. But when we assess the behavioural eligibility criteria, we use the 2018 ASHM guidelines. So almost all of our participants reported receptive condomless sex with casual partners, and that was the main way patients were eligible for enrolment in the study. 75% of our study participants just met one of these four behavioural eligibility criteria. As we noted earlier, we also did have some heterosexual women enrolled on the study, and one of these women was in a serious discordant relationship and was planning to conceive naturally in the coming months. Something interesting about the WA study, though, was that it was the first study to assess the injecting drug use eligibility criteria that were included for the first time in the 2018 guidelines. So we had 5% of our participants reported any injecting drug use in the 3 months prior to study enrollment, and we did ask every participant that. However, when looking at the actual guidelines, which are more about access to safe injecting equipment, very few participants reported not having access to safe injecting equipment, and only two participants met both of these criteria necessary for enrollment, and they were also eligible based on the other behavioural criteria, so no person was enrolled solely based on reporting unsafe injecting practices. But I think it's important as we consider broader suitability for PrEP rather than eligibility to consider other factors that might be important in these decisions for clinicians. So moving on to medication possession ratio. We calculated this from the dispensing logs, which were available for almost all participants. And we used a really simple calculation. It was just the number of pills dispensed divided by the number of days between dispensing. So if someone was given 90 pills at their first visit, we just counted how many days until they were issued another script and picked up another bottle or bottles of PrEP. And given the varying length of follow-up between people in the study, we looked at four different follow-up periods. So we looked at MPR for the first 90 days of enrollment, 180, 270, and then the first full year. So there was a median MPR across the study of one, or virtually one, and we truncated this at one. So say if somebody filled their prescription 3 days before their pills ran out, they would have had an MPR of just over one, but we've maxed it out at one. So Jeff Jin at the Kirby has calculated this for us, thank you. And we can see that there's a very slight decline in medication possession ratio really over the first 6 months. So we go from about 97% in the first 3 months to about, 87% by the time between 9 and 12 months, but there really doesn't seem to be any change after 12 months. So whilst there appears to be very minor declines, remembering that this is the mean and the median MPR across the study stayed pretty consistently at one, which suggests that adherence was quite high. Looking at STI positivity during follow-up, rates of baseline STIs were fairly high across the study, but there really wasn't any change over time. And it's remarkably consistent, the rates of STIs at 12 months and a baseline, and just under one in five participants reported either gonorrhea or chlamydia virtually at any point on the study. So in terms of HIV incidence, so this was our primary study outcome, we had data available for 900 of our 901 participants, and we called the end of study follow-up the 30th of April 2019. So we would have expected an HIV incidence of about 2 per 100 person years, and this just means that among gay and bisexual men who were meeting the eligibility criteria, we would have expected, in the absence of PrEP, up to 20 seroconversions in the 1,000 person years of follow-up that we had on the study. However, we saw just one seroconversion in this cohort, which gives us an overall incidence of about 0.1 per 100 person years of follow-up. This individual was quite a complex case, but they were clearly non-adherent in some months prior to their seroconversion, and they self-reported not taking PrEP at the time of what they believed was their potential exposure. So just to wrap up, I guess the four key points here were that the PrEP-IT WA study participants were predominantly gay and bisexual men living in metropolitan Perth. Adherence was remarkably high and consistent over the 12 months of study follow-up. And similarly, STI positivity was quite high but stable over time. And I guess that second point about adherence really feeds into the final point about HIV seroconversion. That adherence was so high in the face of any potential behaviours would imply that we had really low HIV incidence during the study. And just wanted to say a big thank you to the entire study team. There was huge political will from WA Health to get this study going, and the community partners and the different clinics that we worked with. And it was really genuinely lovely group of people to work with and be part of. So thank you very much to everyone and obviously the participants who were involved in the study.